live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company. Mateo on the scene here at Cabana 24 today. Lots going on at Circa Las Vegas. We're at Stadium Swim. Coming up later on, we're going to talk a little hockey, a little sports betting with Gary Lawless. Lincoln Kennedy is coming in just a little bit to talk about the Raiders. Preseason game number one. Look ahead to preseason game number two and today's joint practice against the Niners. Willie, what's up, buddy?
I am baked.
Mateo, it's a nice answer, would love to curse you out right now.
I don't care.
Yeah. Cabana 24, 108.5 degrees.
I spent...
That's why you're not here.
2.5 hours outside at Raiders practice.
Nice. You look red.
Yeah. Visiting media members was like, man, you need some sunscreen. I was like, yeah, it'll be red today. It'll be brown tomorrow. The Colombian and Lebanese in me, it'll turn to a nice bronze tomorrow.
You're lucky like that.
Yeah, I'm blessed, not lucky.
Did you, I know we were all talking about Hard Knocks before the show. We're not going to do a whole lot on it today, but I don't know if you saw the part on Sean McDermott has to basically bundle up.
Yeah.
Now, luckily, he coaches in Buffalo, so even when it's hot there, it's not that hot. But he's had issues with skin cancer in the past. And actually, you know, he was alongside a coach who passed away years ago from skin cancer. So be careful.
Yeah. I watched it not live, but I turned it on to stream, you know. Here's the thing. I fell asleep watching it. I was taking a nap because yesterday was a long day, so I was taking a nap before the Liberty Aces game, fell asleep, and then I rewatched it, but by then I was getting ready, I was doing things, so I have to do a deep dive into this before we can recap it, and I won't be on until next week, so it'll probably be Mondays are my day, so we can gear up for episode 3, which is on Tuesday, by diving into the first two episodes and gearing up what we're looking forward to most. But, so there you go.
Or maybe not. There's been so much feedback on this Buffalo Bills Hard Knocks that it kind of stinks that maybe for the first time in whatever, 20-plus years, Cofield and Company, and we love the show, we may just be talking about other football shows. I want to do a giveaway here. 364-1100. 364-1100. Front row card shows in town at the Rio. 550 cards. Check that. Tables of cards, comics, and collectibles. We got two tickets right now, 364-1100, caller 7. Grab your tickets at frontrowcardshow.com. Two tickets, 364-1100, 364-1100. I cut you off, Willie. What were we going to say?
The fact that the consensus is that this one is not as good as past means that I'll probably like it. I'm contrarian, so I'm on the opposite side of it. It's kind of like betting against the public, right? There might be. Here's the thing. There, you know what it is so far? Maybe there's not the controversial, biting commentary, the hateful stuff. Maybe there's too much feel-good stuff for this show because there's a lot of snarky people, and you hang around snarky people. You're a snarky guy. You're looking for that pessimistic, nasty cuss in life. Whereas I like the heartfelt stuff. Very attacking today. I mean, you know what I am? I'm very snarky today.
You're very Max Crosby today.
I am very Max antagonistic.
Max didn't get the fight, so now he's like, screw it. Willie's like, I'll fight for you, buddy. I'm going right into Cofield and Company, and let's bicker.
They were trying. They were trying their best, Steve. But they had, apparently, Pete Carroll sent the same message, but apparently Kyle Shanahan, last week I was told by a four-time Super Bowl champion that was in a team meeting last week, and the 49ers were told there will be no mixing it up with these joint practices in Denver or Las Vegas, because let me tell you, that's when injuries happen, number one. Number two, if you're a marginal guy, and I see, basically this was the message, if you're a marginal guy and I see that you're letting someone get under your skin that simple, you may not be back next week. Shanahan laid the law down last week.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of surprised that Max was, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. Max, you know, part of his bit is to be Max on his podcast, and he was talking about the aggression that he was going to be bringing, and he's never not had a fight at one of these joint practices, and I was like, I don't know if you want to talk about it beforehand. Yeah, if I'm the opposition, it's like, hey, Max is saying that. He might be kidding, but if he's serious, cut the crap. I don't want my guys hurt because, you know, you guys need to get extra fired up and fight.
Yeah, Shanny even said, as you'll call him, Shanny, he even said that it's one. He said, I don't mind guys fighting, but when you're out there trying to hurt one another, like actually cause injury to one another, or there's, you know, it's just not. I don't know the right word, but he was just very stern with his answer. He wasn't mad that I asked it, but he was very direct and matter of fact. Like, yeah, no, that was. There's been a message. I'm not having it. So,
well, Pete Carroll spoke after the scrimmage. We got a lot of feedback on the scrimmage that we're going to get to throughout the show. Again, Niners in town to scrimmage against the Raiders. They'll be playing a preseason game coming up on Saturday. Here's Pete Carroll talking about really the goals today, what he wanted out of the scrimmage.
Oh, exactly what I was thinking. Heck, I don't have any idea right now. I'm watching offense. I'm watching defense. I got to see the film. I know everybody worked hard. It was great to get against these guys. They're skilled, and they do a lot of cool things scheme-wise. The tax doesn't help us learn. And so it was a totally positive experience. I thought Kyle did a great job of managing their team, and we tried to do the same so that we didn't get no issues and all that. We avoided all that kind of stuff. So it's just really classy work to get, and we'll make evaluations and figure that out once we get a chance to go watch the film as soon as I leave here.
Sounds like Pete was yelling a little bit, a little hoarse.
One of the closest times that it was in the end zone, and there was a hit, and a Raider stood over a 49er. And it got a little chippy, and then there was some pushing and shoving. And Pete Carroll ran all the way over from the sidelines. He didn't get in his guy's face and sort of chide him. But what he did was I'm guessing. I couldn't hear him. But it seemed like he was talking to him like, hey, I got it. I see it. I appreciate the energy. I appreciate the vibe. But let's go, babe. Come on. We got the, you know, because it was kind of like a shaking his head, directful conversation, tap on the butt. It's, you know, calming him down, but also letting him know, hey, appreciate your vibe, but let's dial it down a notch with that kind of activity. So he didn't look mad, but he certainly addressed it. But it was the one time. I don't know about any other times, because there were some pushing and shoving here and there, but it was one time he left the sidelines, ran over to the end zone, and got one of his guys' face.
Here's what Pete said after the joint practice about what he wants to see on the film.
Really good stuff. I mean, we're blowing them off the football, and they can't make an inch. That didn't quite happen, I know that. But I want to see us execute. We try to treat this just like it's the next opportunity that we have and do stuff right, and that was what we set out to do. We'll find out, you know. I thought on defense, the perimeter looked kind of available to them. They do that. They're a great perimeter team. We've not prepared for them at all, and we got a day to get a little bit better before the ball game.
Yeah, he followed up by saying the Niners are pretty impressive.
You know, Robert Saul and Gus Bradley's over there, and Kyle has done a great job for years and years. They've got a terrific group, and that's only what we would expect from them. You know, they know what they're doing. They have control of their groups. They have style of play that always shows up. So that means they've got a real philosophy in mind and all that. So that's why this is such quality work for us.
Coming up, Lincoln Kennedy's going to check in, one of the voices of the Raiders, of course, former NFL player. Want to remind you that we're here at Circa. They got the Circa Fight House open on Saturday night, Stadium Swim. The UFC 319 card headed by Duplessis and Shamayev goes down with a 7 o'clock pay-per-view start. It's at Circa Las Vegas, the home of the Circa Fight House.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
All right, let's get a real expert to help break down the joint practice today with the Niners and the Raiders. We're hanging out here at Circa Las Vegas, poolside. We're going to go in the pool at some point. I think we're at a toasty 109.2 in Cabana 24 at this point. Beautiful sunny day. Not so easy when you're wearing the pad zone. Lincoln Kennedy knows that. He's one of the many broadcasters for the Las Vegas Raiders, doing the podcast now upon further review with our buddy Paul Gutierrez. Lincoln, it's Cofield. It's Willie. How you doing?
What's up, guys? How you doing? Thanks for having me.
We're good. I appreciate a couple minutes. I mean, what is it like out there when you got to throw the pads on and you know, joint practice in weather like this. I mean, that's got to be quite the barrier to break through.
You're probably wishing for more fights to slow down practice, right? Or maybe possibly get it over with. But it didn't happen today. Look, I thought the Raiders and the 49ers had some good work together, and there's a lot of teachable moments. It'll be interesting to see how much the starters go this second game, because since the world has changed with the preseason, that is the attitude, there's not a lot of times where you'll see a lot of starters play football on both sides of it. But I think for the most part, and I'm just speaking for the Raiders, they need it. Their starters need the work. They needed to learn how to work together, and they need to go out and perform. Now, I know it's not, you know, it doesn't mean anything because it's preseason, but it's a tune-up going into the preseason. And Pete Carroll and his staff has pushed so much energy and so much fine-tuning that we definitely need to see this team come together sooner rather than later.
Link, I was standing with Jesse Sapolo. We were talking, and you know, you look at the laundry list of injuries that the 49ers have coming in, and, you know, you're talking about it can be a little mentally draining. You're out there. You're seeing your guys go down in the first couple of weeks of training camp, your teammates. Can that play a mental mindset? Because George Kittle mentioned afterwards, he was like, no, because if you start getting thinking about it and, you know, playing not to get hurt, that's when you get hurt, you twist something, you stop short. How can that play, especially a guy like you in the trenches?
Well, you know, you got to prepare your body. You know, and look, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. So we're talking about the elongation of the season. But football has evolved to a year-round game in a sense where they're training nonstop. You're putting your body. The only way that you can get better playing football is by playing football. So when this season comes around, that's why it's essential for you to put on the pads, for you to go out there and go full speed and hit. And Kittle's right. You know, you cannot worry about injury. You can't necessarily play carefree or, you know, not be cautious. But you play with too much caution, that's how you get hurt. You have to really trust your instincts. You have to trust your mental preparation. More importantly, you have to trust your body is going to perform. That's why you have to take such great care of it.
Speaking with Lincoln Kennedy, Las Vegas Raiders podcast, voice of the Raiders in many aspects. Link, many questions over the past few years with the offensive line with this team. Well, now, new coach, new offensive scheme, Geno Smith in town. What have you seen the first couple of weeks? How are you liking what the offensive line looks like?
They're not together yet, but they have to come together, and I think they'll come together soon. It's still a work in progress. Trying to finalize the starting five, there's not a whole lot of depth there. They're going to have some young guys that they're probably going to have to key in and trust, but we don't know that yet until we see the final lineup. But right now, for what it's looking, Colt Miller at left tackle, you know, Dylan Parma left guard. You got Jordan Meredith at safety. I mean, not safety, the center. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of some other stuff. And then you've got JPJ playing. You got JPJ playing right guard and DJ Glaze playing right tackle. Solid offensive line on paper. They have to learn how to play together.
Can you talk about the decision to go with Meredith at center? And we've heard, you know, more and more about him kind of being a speed guy for center rather than a power guy. So I've seen a lot of fans say, we want the power guy at center. Can you explain to fans why they're going with Meredith?
Because the power guy needs to be at guard. You have to have somebody who can cut the defense in half. And there's a lot of times, and right now for what it is, JPJ has the most power out of those offensive linemen that they have, the group they have. So that's what I call, it's a phrase that I came up a long time ago. It's Mem. Who's your mauler in the middle? And if you go to back some of the great offensive lines, even go back to the Super Bowl championship for the Philadelphia Eagles last year, Dickinson, they just lost their guard. He was their mauler. He was their guy that set the tone. Back in the day, you had guys like Steve Wisniewski, Kelechi Osemele, you even had Richie Incognito as most recently that I can remember on the Raiders. You had to have that guy who had that little nasty attitude. I think JPJ is that. When you put him at guard rather than center, you force him to just do what he does better rather than having to think about it. The center is the one who controls the offensive line. He's the general of the offensive line. He's the quarterback of the offensive line. When you're out there, we don't want our guys to think. That's the thing. You don't want your guys to think. You want your guys to react. You want your guys to play, especially at offensive line. Putting JPJ at guard allows him to just go. Do what you do. Do that ferocity that you've shown in the past. You don't know he's only been with the Raiders for a year, but what I've seen in college, he has the ability of doormat. Try to cut this defense in half so you can start the running game. Right now, they don't have enough of that. That's why the running game has been unsuccessful so far.
Former Raider great Lincoln Kennedy joining us at LKennedy72 on Twitter. Make sure you check him out. Voice of the Raiders. Link, with that being said, I know you said they have to come together and play together, but what I'm wondering, especially going against Daly at camp, a guy like Max Crosby, he's so elusive, his first step, and that defensive line, each guy individually, their footwork, their athleticism, their agility, is that all there and now it's a matter of coming together? Or do you see that they have to, there are some things individually they have to work on, their quickness and their strength and their agility?
Athletically, athletic-wise, they have all the tools necessary. Now you just have to put it together. The better lines that play well together have played well together longer. That's what you don't have out of this group of five. When you mix and match the pieces, they have this five hasn't played together, and that's right. What they have to do. And until they're able to do that, that's the only way that you can have a true grade. They're all athletic. They can all do the job individual-wise, but this is not an individual game. This is a team game, and that's why it's essential that this offensive line has to come together and learn how to play together.
Three straight years, three different coaches, three different cultures. And this has been an up and down franchise, as you know, since it got to Las Vegas. What do you like so far about the culture that Pete Carroll's building here?
A lot of energy, a lot of excitement, and he's got, as far as I can see, the entire locker room is bought into his ideology, his thought process. That's great, because every coach I've ever played for wanted that. If you don't have that across the board, it's hard to be successful in this league. So, you know, right now the Raiders, the only real place they can go is up, because they're at the bottom of the division looking up. Didn't have a successful season last year. That's the reason why they had the 6th overall draft choice in the draft. So, you know, this is a chance for them to move up, and I think they're going to be successful. I'm not going to sit there and say they're going to make a deep playoff run or a Super Bowl run. I'm not going there. But I do think they can surprise a lot of people with this defense, with the special teams. If this offense can come together, I think they can surprise some people.
What did you see from Tyree Wilson, especially inside today, and how does he become – you know, just at least an average defensive tackle will give him help now that Wilkins is gone?
Well, he's got to play lower. He's still playing elongated like he's a defensive end on the outside playing in space. He has to learn that when you're in the box, you have to play tighter. Center and guards are like fighters in phone booths. You have to play within that tight space. So Tyree has to develop his second move, and he has to implement it quicker, especially being on the inside. He can't just think that his long arms are going to save him all the time because you don't have that space. With that being said, I think it's a work in progress, and I think he'll be good. I think he'll be good to be able to apply pressure to the quarterback. If nothing else, be able to get his hands up and block some of those inner throwing lanes.
We played a Pete Carroll bite earlier the post-practice press conference, and he was talking about defending on the perimeter. What did you see from the defensive backs for the Raiders?
Well, it's a lot of work still has to be done, to be determined. Last week, they got shredded by Seattle's offense running to the outside in the perimeter. And this week, I saw them in a collective effort since that game has been working on proper angles, how to bring down in space, those types of things. Now you have to see it implement. They weren't able to tackle today for the most part in practice. That wasn't allowed. So we'll see if it comes together against the 49ers this weekend.
Can Darian Porter be, you know, a 45-plus snap guy on the edge?
Yeah, I think anything's possible. Look, there are a lot of pieces that the Raiders have brought together. You know, Spychak and Pete Carroll have brought together and had an experience from around the league, but now it's time to play together. Only time will tell. The disservice to the game today, guys, is that there's not much. First of all, it's not much preseason, not even much training camp. There's not many practices that they can go through. So it's hard to bring a team together, but that's why you see the OTAs, the mini camps, and everything else. And as coaches approach the preseason, you see them, you know, use more and more to try to figure out the 53 man roster. It's still a work in progress, but they've got some good names. They just have to go out there and play and do it together.
Link, I think the question every single week after every single game and midway through each practice, or midway through the week as they practice, is going to be about Ashton Jeanty. I know Fred Warner of the 49ers was really complimentary as a guy that's on that line and you know, blocking for a running back. What do you see about this young kid, and how mature and pro ready is he?
Well, I think he's pro ready, but here's the thing: he will not carry the ball 300 plus times like he did last year at Boise State. That just doesn't work for the league these days. It's running back by committee. That running back room is filled with a lot of people who can get things done. I do think Ashton's going to be good in this league. They just have to find a way of solidifying the offensive line and the blocking schemes to where I saw too often today at practice, especially against the 49ers, guys are making cuts in the backfield. and as soon as they get the football. You have to have more of a direct angle getting downhill. You make your cut after you break the line of scrimmage. So the offensive line has got to do its job at winning and controlling line of scrimmage to allow those holes to open up.
Lincoln, great job, man. We appreciate a couple minutes. We know you're a busy guy. Thank you so much.
Anytime, guys. Be well. See you soon.
There he is, Lincoln Kennedy, former Raider, former Falcon, hosting the Upon Further Review podcast with Paul Gutierrez, who will be a regular during the football season on Cofield and Company. Giveaway time. We got two tickets in the ESPN zone for an Aces game coming up. It's presented by West Star Credit Union and Richard Harris Law. It's the Atlanta Dream in town next Tuesday, August 19th, Mick Ultra Arena. You can get your tickets at AXS.com, but we've got a pair right now that you can win. 364-1100, 364-1100, caller number 7. A lot more Raiders on the way, but, you know, we got to get to a team that I think some people are going to look at as a sleeper for the Major League Baseball playoffs, but they are kicking booty right now in the midst of another massive win streak.
Hanging out at Stadium Swim, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Watching some Little League Baseball, also some tennis up on the screens here at Stadium Swim. It's the baseball day. We'll roll out here. Abbreviated schedule today. Got a start coming up in 10 minutes with Miami and Cleveland, Philly, Washington. No Milwaukee today. But the Brewers are one of the best stories in all of baseball. Right now, 32 games over 500 means they are eight and a half games ahead of the Evil Empire Dodgers. And, you know, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago at the trade deadline, Willie, as Rob Manfred went into the Phillies clubhouse and was trying to talk up the labor deal coming up with young players, and Bryce Harper told him to get the F out of the clubhouse. Teams like the Brewers, organizations like Milwaukee, must have Rob Manfred and some of the supposed destitute around baseball, like the Rockies and the Pirates, rolling over in their graves because the Brewers are breaking all molds, and frankly, they have for years. The Brewers have been a good organization, but this team is really unique in the fact that it's winning so many games in what I think is a pretty good division in the NL Central. And I 100% believe because of their pitching and a pretty good bullpen, they can win the World Series.
I think they're as legitimate as they come because, you know, in baseball, we talk about teams like the streaks that they go on early on the season and then they sort of tail away. The St. Louis Cardinals are somewhat, I mean, historic for being a team that just pops up out of nowhere in the second half of the season, comes in, and they're always going to be a threat for whatever reason. And the roster turnover doesn't matter. It's just something, there's some mystique about that organization. The thing about the Brewers, the people are sitting here waiting for them to fail. You know how many games they've lost since May 18th? Now think about that. Today is August 14th. We're talking 3 months. You know how many games they have lost in 3 months, basically?
25.
19.
Wow.
They're 55-19 since May 18th, behind an offense that's hitting .277, slugging .441. In 74 games, they've hit 90 home runs. They're outscoring teams in that stretch by 2.3 runs per game. Baseball sharps, which there aren't a lot, but there are some betting groups. They've got, you know, the run line play is a sucker play, but they got to find ways. And then this day and age with, you know, the two-team parlays and mixing and matching and round robins, I mean, if there was ever a run line team, they've outscored teams 427-258. Since May 18th, an average final of 5.8 to 3.5. Now think about that. Nearly 3 months, they're averaging nearly 6 runs per game at 5.8. This team right now is the most dangerous team in baseball.
Plus 750 on the William Hill boards to win the World Series, behind the Dodgers and the Phillies, Seattle and the Tigers coming up behind them. The crazy thing with the Brewers is I don't think outside of fantasy baseball players and maybe the hardcore, super hardcore bettors, if most people can name more than like three or four guys in their lineup. Number one, they actually have the leader for Rookie of the Year, which the NL Rookie of the Year has not been a robust race. I think the kid Ramirez, the catcher in Miami, probably should be the leader, but Isaac Collins of the Brewers is the leader, and he represents kind of what the Brewers are. Like, they have a great player in Christian Yelich.
Yep.
But most of their lineup is filled with good defenders, guys who hit for pretty decent average. In Collins' case, he's 292, 8 homers, 42 ribs. He's got like an 890 OPS. But right now he leads for Rookie of the Year, but it's like a lot of Isaac Collins and Durbins and guys like that. They don't have a ton of big bangers. Like Reese Hoskins has been injured of late. But a lot of what the Brewers do is because of their pitching staff.
Then there's your balance. Because, I mean, your pitching staff's going to come in, and you're going to get solid pitching, and then you're going to – and imagine this. Their rookie hurler is on the shelf right now.
Mizorowski.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're getting a good solid 5, 6, 7 innings, and as you mentioned at the start, you know, the bullpen comes in, and your batting – and your lineup is getting you 6 runs a night, I mean, it's pretty much – I mean, the numbers tell the story. There's always a time to refer to and not refer to stats. Like I said, you know, you have these short spurts, right? A team's won 4 straight, 8 of 10, whatever it may be. But then you look beyond that in a baseball season. This is a team that's been doing this for 3 months. It's about time that they start getting, you know, being paid respect. What's funny is in the midst of this streak – They finally met up with the Cubs when the Cubs were in first place, and since that series, and they overtook the Central, the Cubs have sort of seen their demise. You know who? What other historic franchise played their rival, and since then has fallen off? And that's the Yankees. They went to Boston, they lost 3 straight, and then since then, Toronto overtook them.
Disaster. Yeah, so Collins and William Hill, Rookie of the Year NL, -115. Drake Baldwin, even money. And then it drops off big time. Cade Horton of the Cubs, who's come on late, 13-1. Want to remind you, get into the William Hill Pro Pick'em Contest. $25 entry fee gets you in on the action for all 18 weeks of the regular season. All you got to do is pick the winning teams. No point spreads, over $1.2 million in cash prizes. You can get the bonus grand prize. You pick 215 winners or more. $1 million bonus. You buy 4 entries, you get the 5th 3. Register today. Look up all the locations. Get more information at williamhill.us. It's the Pro Pick'em Contest brought to you by William Hill. Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo.
So what's the scenario? Lawyer and host of Suit Up News, Xavier Pope, joins Cofield and Company now.
Thursday afternoon, beautiful Las Vegas. 110.2 in Cabana 24 here at Stadium Swim Circle Las Vegas. We know Chicago's nice, probably a little cooler, but the humidity, though. Xavier Pope is with us. Xavier Pope is with us as he joins Cofield and Willie. EP, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, Steve? The weather's actually pretty perfect here, man. We're sitting in a cool 70, nice 79. It's sunny. It's humidity is perfect. Nice little breeze. Perfect, man.
I feel like the old days, though, in Chicago might be gone, where sitting on a patio porch, the front stoop, you know, at near 6 o'clock local time and throwing down a beer. I saw your Threads post about the latest consumption habits with Americans and alcohol, and it's kind of interesting that are things going down or up? What's the latest in terms of trends? It looks like it's trending down, no?
Yeah, I mean, it's, Gallup has this consumption habit survey they've been doing for several generations, and this is the lowest been reported since, 1958. Consumption dropped to 54% of Americans reporting they drank alcohol, down from 58% in 24, and 62% in 23, down from a pretty high during the pandemic when people had nothing else to do but than to booze. But there's been reports about the younger generation not being into alcohol like their parents did. And it's not attributed to, I thought what's interesting about this survey was about recreational marijuana being legalized in many different states. It's not attributable to that teeth. So I just think that people are just, hey, like, alcohol is bad, and think that it's for long-term health and 7 different cancers, and I think that people are kind of shying away from it more now than they did before.
Could it be the pricing of alcohol now? It has gotten pretty pricey, especially if you're going out, but even at, you know, stores or grocery stores or liquor stores, everything has gone up.
I mean, that's a really great way to look at it, Steve. I mean, we look at in the inflation and cost of people's, their consumer price index, people's confidence in prices. I think that there's definitely something to be said about that. I mean, but even when you go out, I mean, drinks are $25. I mean, even if people are not consuming alcohol, they're charging the same price for a mocktail. So I do potentially think that maybe people thinking alcohol maybe is not just too expensive for their body, but too expensive for their wallets.
Yeah, I love the mocktail. How what a joke that is when you go out and I see people drink non-alcoholic beer, and it's like $2 less than a regular beer. Like, what the hell's going on here? But I really like to point that, and this flies in the face. We talk about this all the time about people in Gen X and boomers are always like, kids these days, they're not like us. Yeah, they're actually smarter. They're not going to pour. And listen, I like to drink. I'll say myself, I've probably gone from, because I was getting so fat and unhealthy, that I probably went from about, believe it or not, like 35 beers a week to now less than 5. I've got cases of beer just sitting at home, not being drunk at all. But I think it is a nod to younger people where they're like, hey, you know what? There is a lot of damage that you can do by drinking, so they're actually smarter than we were.
I mean, 35 beers a week, Steve. Yeah, that wasn't very smart.
I live in Vegas. Come on now. I gotta go out and entertain all the time. Come on. Or just sit at home and have like 10 in a night. So it's too much?
Okay. Okay, dude.
Well, let's continue on the theme of young people are smart, or are they? I saw your point about, you had a conversation in a rideshare. You were talking about Google and just going to the web. And I am on my phone all the time, and I think people will get mad, but a lot of times I just have a thirst for knowledge. I'm looking up stuff all the time. It actually comes into conversation a lot of times when I'm out with my significant other. That said, you brought up the point back in our days that we used to go to the library. We used to read. We used to go get encyclopedias. I love the term microfiche. Kids don't do that anymore, but I wonder if that makes them less smart, or they're more streamlined now and they can consume information a lot faster than we used to be able to.
Yeah, I mean, the conversation kind of ended in this weird thing, like, oh, we remember those days? And we're like, yeah. And he goes, the Lyft driver goes, you can do all that all day, and then you could not even find what you're looking for. I mean, so more efficient to find information, but people all have all the information in their fingertips, but they may not necessarily be seeking for information. They may be seeking for confirmation, and that's what the issue is in our current society.
All right, let's talk some legal stuff here with Xavier Pope, attorney in Chicago, cultural contributor to Cofield and Company here on these Thursdays. Well, for the second time in a week, the arbitration process has basically been knocked down by a federal court. And at the beginning of the week, it was John Gruden. Now it's the Brian Flores case with claims of racism against the league and 3 different organizations, the Broncos, the Giants, the Texans. And the notion basically is, in this case, the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Manhattan said, you know what? You can't just arbitrate issues within your own sport and within your own organizations. Organization. So what's happening here?
I mean, the NFL really is a confident institution, right, Steve? To think they could have an arbitration where the commissioner of the league is the league arbitrator. I mean, there is absolutely, when you think about the concept of an arbitrator, the person that's the arbitrator is supposed to be neutral. There's no neutrality when the guy on the other side is the guy in the middle. So I think that it just on its face it smacks of just, I would say, the confidence by the league. It's just flat out arrogance by the league that think they are that so much in bed with the American political system, the judicial system, that they could just run shot over claims of racial discrimination and some of the different cases for Gruden. So I think this is, the NFL doesn't want to get to a place where it's discovery of certain documents and what teams have done. And I think it's looking to get there, and the league is in a bad place right now.
And it's weird to say, as you know, the rest of us are labor, that we need to root for the labor in this case, but the coaches are labor. And when I say coaches, we're going to kind of lump together Brian Flores, who claims the league was racist, John Gruden, who the league with leaks, allegedly, claim that John Gruden is racist, but they are kind of linked together here in terms of employee rights.
Yeah, I mean, when you have on one end how the league treated an employee in relation to his race, and then how the league chose to cover itself in terms of how to put John Gruden in a space where he will be a fall guy for how some of the league operated. And so, which comes in a different aspect legally, but it also is respective of how the league treats the people that work for the league.
Well, I also have to tie in that this pushback by athletics employers, right? A lot of it started with Ed O'Bannon, who we're very familiar with here in the Vegas market, because he lived here, he worked here for a long time, UCLA guy, believe it or not, was thinking about going to UNLV before the scumbag NCAA took down Tark back in the day. But what Ed O'Bannon did with the video game lawsuit really was the start of this pushing back. And frankly, I'm not telling college athletes what to do, but man, for the next 20 years, if every one of the thousands of athletes who make money now off of NIL threw like $10 into an Ed O'Bannon fund, he'd be set for life. What he did was pretty monumental.
Yeah, I mean, and Ed, if you talk, I've interviewed Ed, I've been on panels with Ed, Sonny Vaccaro, he will always say that is the driving force behind all of that. But Ed O'Bannon still was the person who had the courage to push through that. To get, even when the case, when Ed O'Bannon was being really raked under the coals by sometimes some of the judgmental press did not see the future coming, he called and he had to talk to Bill Russell, who encouraged him to continue on in his case to be able to push through this. So Ed O'Bannon is an important member of sports history in terms of athletes' rights, especially specialized talent rights. And it's important, even if it's specialized labor, it's helping other people to be able to see what's possible so they don't just take what they can get from those around them. I think to take it on bigger power structures like the NCAA.
When people listen to Cofield and Company, I'm sure there are times when they hear Xavier Pope on and Justin Watkins is on Wednesdays. We have attorneys on the show, and it's become a staple of the show. And I'm sure they wonder, like, why are these guys on? Well, first of all, we just talked 4 minutes ago about having a healthy curiosity, a thirst for knowledge. And I heard several talk shows this week addressing stories that I thought had legal angles to them and needed a deep dive. And they're like, oh, it's not believable. It's not a story. And it's like, well, how about we bring out an expert? So one of the things I thought of last week, the NFL has banned smelling salts. Now, if the players want to get the smelling salts themselves and provide the supply of smelling salts, they can do that. My first thought was there a worry about legal liability from the NFL providing the smelling salts?
I think that in terms of how it's applied to the player, but I'm searching for where that liability can be when teams have trainers, have teams that apply different types of medical procedures to players all the time. And so what I'm thinking is just what it looks like maybe to the audience in terms of when you are snapping someone out of, say, a concussion.
Yeah.
And with the perception of the league, I think it's something that, the NFL always thinks about is perception. I think that's something that seems to be more of my thoughts about it. It's more than this litigation.
Xavier Pope is up on Cofield and Company. Willie Cofield, we're hanging out here at Circa Las Vegas Stadium Swim. Okay, I saw a very exciting story early in the day. I don't know what the outcome was, but was there a sheep gate in Chicago? Was there a random sheep running around the streets of Chicago today?
It was yesterday, and I'm like, right. Well, how did I miss it? It was in my neighborhood, Steve. So I missed the sheep in my neighborhood. There's this butcher place that's been around here forever before this neighborhood got gentrified, but the sheep gets out before it gets slaughtered, runs around. People find the sheep, and I think it's interesting people cared about the sheep when they decide to escape. Not when he was going to get it, you turned it to lamb. The sheep was put into a conservatory that they were able to take care of it. So the sheep is okay. some animals are just built different. I'm not going to get on your table. I'm going to be in here eating grass.
There you go. He escaped. Nice job. Very nice job. Okay, now this is a tough one. Willie and I are going to have to deal with our agedness. Willie and I are both 55 plus. I saw you make mention of, I guess, two or three instances where you saw elderly people just kind of randomly jumping into conversation with others. And have you noticed a trend that once folks get a little older, they will just have rando convos?
Yeah, well, anyone will listen. Whether it's the cashier at the store, whether it's the person next to them on the plane, anywhere. And I saw people of different backgrounds doing this. And I wanted to ask threads, like, what is it? What was this about? And there was so many people responded saying, there's a loneliness that different friends have passed away. That they don't have maybe kids that they have their own lives, and so they don't have anyone to talk to. There's this episode of Seinfeld when they had this little brother little sister thing where Jerry and George and Elaine, and they go out and someone finds someone with a goiter, and then George gets fired by his guy. So I think that people do want someone to talk to, and I think that's where we see the phenomenon. That seemed to be the sentiment of many of the people that were responding to the thread.
Steve put this down on the rundown, Xavier, and put 70 once they reach 70. I'm 56. I would need to hire you as counsel because I am 1,000% guilty of this. All the time.
Already?
If I overhear anything that has to do with Old Vegas within earshot or a team, let's say it's a team that I'm covering, like, and I hear someone make a wrong comment, I'm definitely jumping in. There's just no doubt about it. But what I need to ask you is this, what's the difference of it from this or you're in the barbershop and somebody's talking in one chair and then someone who's waiting jumps in and says, wait a minute. And then they have to get in that conversation.
Well, I think that's the culture of that conversation. That's the culture of that environment, though. Because I think that the barbershop is the only place where people are involved in community discussions, mostly, where they are just engaging in a service that has nothing to do with each other. They're like, just, hey, you're cutting my hair, you're cutting this guy's hair, oh, you're doing this woman's hair, you're doing that woman's hair. And people just start talking. Whatever, I don't know what that is, my barber is he's pretty much like an amateur therapist.
Yes.
You're talking to him. That's a little bit different than being on the street with old people.
Xavier, love you, buddy. We're up against it. You have a good weekend. We'll catch up with you next week.
Love you guys.
Yeah, I was hanging out with Willie this weekend. I did a little staycation. Was down here at Circa Las Vegas at Stadium Swim, and I threw down an edible. And about 2 hours into hanging out at the pool, I was like, "Will I shut the f?" I was like so chatty. So there you go, elderly guy in the pool just can't shut up.